Good morning and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Davis, and the show, of course, is the Mary Davis Show. And we're going to be covering several issues, which has been on the news and on television every single day, just about for the last couple of months. But we'll just sort of brush on some of them with my guest this morning. On our live line is the Honorable Betty Jean Grant. She is a Democrat. She is also majority leader in the Erie County Legislature. And Joan Simmons, who heads an organization, I can never get all of it right, so I'll let her just say it herself.
The Niagara Frontier Movement for the Advocacy of African American Human Rights.
Betty Jean, what, first of all, since you're with the county, let's just brush over quickly what's going on in the county that you know that we don't know and should know.
Well, we probably should know, but many of us do know, but most of us don't, is that we just passed the budget, and for the second not for the fifth year in a row, we've had an increase in cultural funding that was cut by Chris Collins. So the budget was passed. It showed a slight tax reduction, three pennies, you know, mm-hmm. So it doesn't really equate to much for the homeowners. But I guess if you look at psychologically,
it's better than nothing.
You might say there's not an increase. Mm-hmm. But what's most important is we increased money for libraries, increased money for cultures, mm-hmm. increased money for ECC, mm-hmm. Erie Community College. So that's very important to know that the budget was passed without a tax increase, and people will see a slight less bill in their county property taxes, but better than that, they'll see increased funding for those quality of life institutions like libraries and colleges and places such as those.
Was that a campaign promise that our county exec made?
Yeah, he made a campaign promise more so the first time he ran than now. Because he did fulfill all his initiatives that he had said that was his goals and objectives. He fulfilled that in the first term. So he continued what he had done for his first term.
Mm-hmm. Betty Jean, can you address the status? I understand that Erie County is going to roll out a program to address the heroin epidemic, that they're forming coalitions with clinics or hospitals?
Yeah, they are, because, as you know, heroin been a problem in a minority and African American community for generations, decades, because it was not impacting our youth, our young, viable youth. Most people who were heroin addicts, might have been, I would say, unemployed, underemployed, or just poor people. And those who people, when they're passing by, don't give them, a lot of people, a second thought. So it was not a problem for the county per se officially, because who was being impacted was not, in their mind, I would say, citizen who they deemed worthy of saving.
Like the suburbs.
I'm trying to be politically correct.
Yeah.
We began to affect suburbia, and we began to affect doctors and lawyers and, mm-hmm. and nurses and young kids, and particularly young kids. Mm-hmm. They saw it as a problem. They saw it as a disease. I wouldn't be surprised to see heroin classified disease like cocaine was so many years ago. What they're doing is, because they're losing so many people, I think this year death from heroin and what are they mixing it with? Mm-hmm. I think it might be heroin, cocaine mixed, or heroin and something else mixed together.
Just to make it more powerful, probably.
Our youth, particularly in the suburbs, that they're making all avenues to save them. They're having community centers, they have an executive director. When we first came out, only a police officer could give the antidote. Mm-hmm. Now you got firefighters, now you got community-based organizations, now you got the family
teachers
of the victim. Mm-hmm. And now I heard yesterday they're going to allow the victim of a potential overdose or an overdose to inject himself mm-hmm. under supervision of someone else. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised to see that, and I was wondering, how can somebody who's obviously overdosing and possibly dying from that mm-hmm. be able to save himself? But that's what they're going to do.
That's
well, you know what I found
thing.
Interesting about that, Betty Jean, was their rationale, the way it's evolved, so that now, instead of taking those individuals into the criminal justice system, mm-hmm. now they're going to take them into rehab.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
You know, and it amazes me that, you know, this has been going on in the African American community for decades, and so long as it remained there, it wasn't a crisis. Mm-hmm. Now it's a crisis because it's hit the suburbs.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder how many people been in possession of heroin has gone through the criminal justice system, like people who've been in possession of marijuana. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where most of our courts and our prison inundated with those who are either selling or ingesting marijuana. They are the criminals. Mm-hmm. Right now, because of the heroin overdose, I don't hear too much of this heroin person was sent to jail or taken to jail. I heard he was saved. You know, his life was saved. And I don't blame anybody who wants to be saved or his family members be saved, but that's a little bit fair. Let's treat all diseases the same. Let's treat all addiction the same, mm-hmm. and let's give help to all, not just some.
You know, before it was heroin was like a big problem in New York City. It seems as though it's migrated to Western New York. Is that true or no?
Well, you know, it has. I guess with the availability of something's cheap. I forget what it is. Not heroin, but there's another drug. I can't think about it. But it's cheaper now, and they said that. That's why people are, it's even cheaper than prescription drugs.
Is that the drug that they can make that's sort of like a manufactured drug? And I'm trying to think of it, too, that it's kind of like they call it a, they do it in a million, put it together in your garage or whatever else in any kind of way.
Oh, I know what it is. I think the fentanyl patches.
I forget the name of it, too, but I know it's supposed to be not something that can come about in nature like you get from plants. It's a man-made manufacturable thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is supposed to be it. But it seems as though it is on the rise, and as you both have pointed out, it seems like everybody gets concerned about it like they did years ago when you suddenly look up and hear our, you know, white suburbanites getting involved in drugs, and all at once, it's something that everyone needs to pay attention to.
In fact, it became such an issue, Mary, that at our budget hearing, when people came in to comment on the budget before we approved it, mm-hmm. they designated a certain portion of the hearing to those to come in. I had about 90 people come in to talk about the heroin overdose, how we need to help.
Wow, and 90 people, that's a pretty large group.
It absolutely is. I tell you how big the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the first time, I believe this budget is addressing heroin addiction and putting money in place for that for the first time I know in our budget since I've been in the county legislature.
Wow, that is something.
Well, I heard also, Betty Jean, I don't know how true it is, but I heard, you know, like Amsterdam, where they have actually safe houses, which is kind of a misnomer, but for addicts to go to where they can inject,
mm-hmm.
and they provide the needles and...
Wow.
Well, that's what I heard, that they were talking, and I think it was somebody from downstate,
mm-hmm.
in the legislature, was from downstate that was talking about mm-hmm. creating safe places,
mm-hmm.
which is...
But how you create safe places for an illegal substance?
That's a good question.
Yeah. You know,
they may be talking about people who are on the street, have passed out on the street, or mm-hmm. or they find that they're homeless, and that could be a safe place to keep them from either being maltreated on the streets or, you know, dying out there from because of lack of care. That's the only reason I can kind of think of that.
I think
you
want
to
the liability, because if you create a safe place, and it's named safe place, and somebody died of an overdose, that might be, the county might be liable. Whoever created those mm-hmm. houses might be liable for a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
You know who was addressing this the other night? Who is the medical, is it chief medical officer for Erie County? The woman.
Yes. Oh, well, I can't think of her name.
She mm-hmm. was the one that was Christine? Discussing it.
I can't mm-hmm. think of her. Commissioner.
She wasn't pro.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of her name, but I know she came from Children's Hospital. She's very, very effective, but I can't think of her
mm-hmm.
name. Doesn't come to mind right now.
Well, they need somebody to do something like that. You know, I heard, too, and I don't know how, if everybody is dancing about this. I know that Joan is quite active in educational issues, but that I would say the dishonorable Mr. Palladino is planning on running for governor in 2019, I believe it is.
Yeah, and I think he's based his decision to give another shot, which he said he never do, and he said that before he ran for the school board. However, that's another misinformation he put out there. He didn't mm-hmm. run. He promised not to. I think based on Trump's numbers, you know, instead of going down, they're going up. And they say that even it's going up on a national level. Maybe not in Iowa, where they're going to have the caucuses.
Well, that's mainly among Republican voters, I think, primary
voters. Trump numbers are going up, and I'm very surprised, or they're going up.
Well, I think they're talking about among Republican voters, because certainly I don't think it includes a lot of Democrats. I think
Be independents, could be conservatives.
Well, it could be independents who tend to vote Republican oftentimes.
But I think don't forget, the lot of South is these people registered Democrat, but they vote Republican.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They've
That's
done it for, you know, since the 1940s. They have changed their, they didn't change affiliation, but they changed how, when they go into that polling mm-hmm. place, who they vote for. Mm-hmm. So a lot of Democrats, a lot of Republican candidates get Democrat votes.
And something else that's been happening in education, I've been hearing from some members of the school board that Mr. Case has turned out not to be the savior a lot of people, Cash, it is, yeah, that has turned out not to be the savior that a lot of people thought he would be, that he has a lot to be desired. Is this kind of like deja vu all over again from what we had to find out from Dr. Williams?
Joni spent a lot of time with the board meetings, so if you want to comment on that, because I have not, you know, attend any of the board meetings mm-hmm. lately.
Well, you know, I think quite frankly, when Dr. Cash was hand-picked by Commissioner Aaliyah, the assumption was, obviously, Aaliyah was hired by the Regents because she followed Governor Cuomo's program on education. Mm-hmm. And likewise, she wouldn't have appointed Cash if he didn't follow the same line of thinking. So I don't know why anyone is surprised by the positions that he's taken, mm-hmm. Because she obviously wouldn't have handpicked mm-hmm. him if mm-hmm. he didn't agree with her. And she has not been overly optimistic about Buffalo, even though Buffalo's statistics in terms of graduation rates and dropout rates and so on are, you know, nearly as high as Syracuse or Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, mm-hmm. quite frankly, as far as Dr. Cash is concerned, I'm disappointed in a way because I thought he presented himself as being his own person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That he would lead based on his own experience in Memphis and so on. And I think what, like I said, I'm not sure why I'm even surprised that considering how he got mm-hmm. in that position.
Well, apparently, from what I can understand, he certainly has not been as supportive of minority positions as everyone thought he would be. So that's probably a case to follow. It seems as though the honeymoon for him, though, is ended rather soon, you know, rather than this long period, because maybe he showed his hand kind of quickly. It's the only thing I can think of right now for this reputation that he's gotten already. I don't think he's been there, like, what, has he been there 4 months yet?
I think it's been at least 4 months.
Yeah, about four months. Yeah.
Yeah, so that seems like to me a short period of time there. And then something else, yeah, I'm thinking about what we may be facing still in 2016 that we have faced from 2013, actually from 2012, 2013, 2014, certainly in 2015, and may we still have these same issues lingering in 2016. And that's the situation of shootings. The latest one, of course, being in Laquan McDonald. That happened in 2014, but these tapes didn't come out until just recently. And, you know, as I was talking about it and was hotly disputed by one of the guests on my show, who I like a lot, said that, you know, why is everybody surprised at that? And he was rather sick and tired of talking about black issues. And that was Frank Gist, who felt that why are anybody even still talking about this? And I had thought basically that myself, like probably a lot of other people, thought most of this only happened to black men and boys. Mm-hmm. But only come to find out there are a lot of black women and girls who have been victimized in police actions. Not the young girl who was at the beach party, who was dragged. She was in her little bikini, a little bathing suit, and was dragged on the ground by the cops. You know, this big kind of cop. This is the skinny 16-year-old girl. And then the girl, whatever the situation was, the student who was dragged desk and all and thrown across a room. in a classroom. You know, and it was, to me, it was so unusual because you don't hear that much about women and girls. And then here we had a serial rapist policeman who was victimizing these black women and girls on his beat, had been getting away with it for I don't know how long, until he was finally caught after assaulting 13 women and one girl as young as 17 years old. And the poetic thing that she said was, well, when asked why didn't you report it, was, who was I going to report it to? Another cop?
Yeah.
You know, and so that caught my surprise, although I had a big dispute, you know, with Frank Gist, who's a columnist and quite a regular on the show, too, who thought that he was sick and tired of hearing about it because it happens, it's been happening all the time, and he wanted to move on to other issues. But to me, I couldn't quite leave these issues alone because they seem to be so poignant to what we're going through now, and maybe will even continue in 2016, except for the militancy of a lot of student groups and, of course, the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mm. You know, I just want to say, because I know Frank, and I think Frank probably saying, you know, not that he's not concerned or he doesn't have sympathy and empathy. He doesn't think it's wrong. I think he's saying, why are we surprised? Mm-hmm. Why are we surprised something has been happening for generations and that will continue to happen? Because we're, as a people, and we as a elected body of a politician, don't address the issue. Why are we surprised when we don't do anything to help stop it? I think that was his point. We mm-hmm. don't go out and vote. We don't vote out bad politicians who allow the police officers, because the politician control the police, the mayor control the police of every mm-hmm. city. So I believe Frank was just being sarcastic, saying, why are we surprised? We don't do nothing to stop it. We just talk about it, and that's all we do.
And keep talking. Because it was a surprise to me, mainly because you don't hear that much about women.
Yes, you do. Actually, mm-hmm. the African American Policy Forum, which is a group of professional women, African American women and men, mm-hmm. And they have had webinars, seminars mm-hmm. Regarding African-American women, mm-hmm. bringing that to the forefront. Mm-hmm. And they do this on quite a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And they're all over, from all over the country. I've been on webinars with women from California, mm-hmm. Where they're dealing with addressing mm-hmm. issues where women have been lost mm-hmm. in all of the controversy.
And I guess I'm talking about, you don't see it on major media a lot. You know, you hear about men a lot. But in major media, you don't hear, like, you don't see all the time the way these incidents happen, unless there's something so big that they have to report it on CNN or MSNBC or ABC or CBS or NBC. It's what I was talking about. But if that happens to some other people in some other cultures, it's a lot in there. And God knows if it happens to a white woman, it's quite all over the place. You know, if a cop had beat up some white woman, it would be major news stories. So I was thinking about it in that term. But now it seems that it's coming out more, and so many people are walking around with cell phones and other cameras and other different things, that it's hard to do something in the dark that won't come out in the light. Like this cop said, who had assaulted all these women, and he was shocked when he got all these years in prison, and as should he have gotten. And that was because you prey on women who you figure are low status or live in African-American community neighborhoods that are not so well protected, or maybe women who may have used drugs or had some kind of record, because as one woman said, who is he going to tell? You know, who are you going to tell? And who's going to believe you against the word of a cop? You know, so he thought that he could just do this with impunity. And it, to me, that he's like, that's a serial rapist.
What did he give him, 263 years?
A lot of time. He had a lot of time, and he should do every day of it.
Well, you know, it's the grand jury, or the jury that came in with that. Actually, it was a hung jury mm-hmm. in the case of I'm sorry with all the names, but he was the one, the young man that died in the ambulance.
Oh yes, Freddie Gray.
Mm-hmm. Well, the judge, and it was almost unprecedented. Mm-hmm. He sent that jury back to deliberate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
So you know, I think it
they were hung, and he said, no, go back and deliberate some more.
And deliberate some more. Yeah.
So, but it's just kind of like it's becoming so prevalent. But again, you know who we're seeing really the militant ones, and that's the younger, particularly college students, who are doing this type of frontal fighting. And you know what else is getting to me, this kind of coming to the forefront of what we have seen before? And we talked about this on TV once, I think, and it was that it's like before it was everybody said, what are the black preachers doing? Are the black And it seems as though these younger people, these students, are kind of by-stepping many black preachers where they're just not seem to be as relevant as they did before. Now, Betty Jean, you and Joan may both disagree with me on that point. If so, you know, state your case.
Well, I think a lot of our younger generation, they're not as, I say, committed or dedicated to attending church as we have attended for so long. They seem to see the pastor maybe, and should see him more of a role more than just a shepherd. They want to see the pastor, you know, being able to help the condition, their condition, you know. And I think that if the pastor would take the clout they have as a body, take the resources they have as a body, pull that, and then come up with a plan that's going to improve the lives of a lot of their parishioners and members, I think they will have more people would be more inclined to go. If you go to church, you know, True Bethel pulls in a younger audience because the pastor is, you know, is youth oriented, and a lot of his he put youth in leadership positions. Some church, you know, there by tradition only the elders and older people, you know, do everything, so the youth feel like they're not a part of the structure of the church.
Could it be that young people kind of like see a lot of black preachers as part of the establishment? And before you answer that question, let me just tell our audience who we're listening to this morning. We have Betty Jean Grant on our live line, and she is a minority leader of the Erie County Legislature. She is also a Democrat, and she's very, very active in the community as well as many other things. In fact, a lot of people in the county-wide population call Betty Jean when they have problems instead of calling their own city representatives or even county representatives. And Joan Simmons, who heads an organization with a very long name, who has been very interested in educational issues, and we're happy to be talking with her this morning. Now, getting back to that, could it be that not only are a lot of people unchurched, so to speak, but a lot of people begin to look at a lot, I'm talking about in the African-American community only now, begin to look at ministers as part of the establishment and not quickly so in tune to them, and who may not want to be so resident to talk about turning the other cheek as they are to saying, no, we're not going to take this anymore, and business as usual is not good enough.
Well, I think you can't ignore the history that the church has played in the African American community.
Of course, protest and movement started
and
there.
And the very fact that ministers were the authority in the African American community.
Yes, that's true.
And
but the operative word was.
Well, and that they wielded a lot of influence and a lot of power. And to this day, when politicians are running for office, particularly in urban areas, the first thing they do is make contact with the ministers in
the city. Well, like Donald Trump and his 100 pastors that he was supposed to have got that were going to endorse him and didn't do it.
Well, speaking to young people, though, when I speak to my nephews and nieces that are in university, their comment is they've seen, and I'm not making a generalization, that they've seen this power that ministers have in the black community abused and misused.
Well, let me just say this. I'll just finish. If you look at the ministers and you look at the Buffalo Common Council, there are 5 minority leaders, and they're all 5 male. There are 4 African Americans and 1 Hispanic. 4 of those 5 members are ministers. They're ministers. So, you know, ministers, not only do they influence the politicians, they're in fact themselves now are the politicians.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's true too. And I think probably a lot of that is because people are busily saying that it's, again, we just won't do things like we did before. It's amazing to me, though, that nonviolence is still in vogue, but it is not so widely accepted as it once was at a time. And it's not the idea that you can always look to one savior, like people look to Martin Luther King or some other person, that they're not looking for one savior to come upon and do things. But still, as you pointed out, most of the time, you know, white politicians and white people in general tend to think that the last and final word always in the African-American community is the clergy. And that may not necessarily be so true today as it was maybe even 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, well, you know, I see minister, you know, getting more involved in different issues that they would sort of relegated to the elected official.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a lot of you're minister organizing instead of, you know, waiting on their political leaders to make those deals. They're making those deals themselves with the governor and everybody else. So it's sort of good that they are empowered themselves. But by the same token, we hope that empowerment goes just beyond their church and it goes to the general population. But it also it kind of undermines the duly elected politician, too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
It undermines those who are elected to represent the people.
I agree with you. And the fact is, in Buffalo, it's so fractalized and fragmented that, and again, all that support, for example, would go behind you as legislator in Erie County. That support would instead of being so fragmented, it would certainly have a lot more weight if we were all on the same page.
Absolutely.
Instead of everybody trying to take a little piece.
Take a little piece of pie from themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And everybody's working across purposes here.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their own agendas. But that's being taken advantage of, which is one of the reasons why, you know, with the billions of dollars pouring into Buffalo, it's still ranked the third poorest city in the United States.
Absolutely.
The two things just don't relate.
Mm-hmm.
How can you have 40% or more of your African American and Hispanic males unemployed?
Right, and politicians become smart too. They don't wait to have a meeting with the elected officials who are representing that person, the population on a city, county, or state basis, say, you know, what do your community want? How can we help?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they'll just make that call to those different ministers and ask them individually, what do your church want?
Mm-hmm.
So, and when you're trying to deliver goods and services and resources to the community, you find you can't because every pastor has gotten his own individual piece, then you have nothing to negotiate. You can't negotiate that you say, I have the support of the community and all the ministers behind me, and this is what they want through meetings, and this is what we want as a community. You can't do that because the community has been compromised and fragmented, like Jones say, by people making their own separate deals.
Yeah, well, I agree with you wholeheartedly.
And just for those of you who are just joining us again this morning, my guest on our live line is the Erie County Legislator Minority Leader, Betty Jean Grant. And in-house with me is Joan Simmons, and she heads a local activist group here in Buffalo, and she's primarily interested a lot in educational issues. Now, I know we've all heard about what's going on, of course, in the Republican Party and what's been happening there. And that phrase I brought up earlier about Benjamin Franklin, when he said, he who values security above liberty deserves neither. And it's probably as true as it was 200 years ago, it's still true now. Now, we take Donald Trump, and can anyone imagine what a Donald Trump presidency would be like? Betty Jean, you want to start first?
I would say chaotic, dysfunctional, and I don't know. He reminded me of Mr. Paladino.
Mm-hmm.
He
a bully.
Reminded me of somebody who wants to argue, who wants to bully and bluff. Mm-hmm. And I think that if he were become president, we certainly see that definition of a bully pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly see him trying to force his view, not necessarily the country view, but his own personal view on other nations. I just can't see him negotiating for the good of the United States on a national, international level based on how he acts now and how disrespectful he is right now.
Well, you know what? I don't think I don't think that even if he goes into the convention with the number, the requisite number of delegates, that's what, March or April, I don't think that the Republican Party can afford to have a Donald Trump being their front runner. Mm-hmm. So somewhere along the line, no, he's threatening to run on as an independent.
Well, he take that back at the last debate. Yeah, debate that he said that he wasn't going to do that. So he walked that back a bit. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I don't know if he did that.
But even as of last night, they were still debating that issue with if the you know, and again, it's a, you know, my way or the highway, which is a Paladino tactic. And that's Trump saying, you know, if the Republican Party doesn't treat him right, whatever that means, then he's going to go off on his own. And I'm not concerned about him being president. What concerns me is that in the damage he's doing in the meantime, you know, in terms of equity and in employment and education for minorities, in race relationships, he's playing to the lowest common denominator and based on fear. So it's the damage that he does, you know, in the meantime, in the next year, that concerns me more than anything else.
Well, there's one thing we all have got to not overlook, and that's when you listen to all of the Republican candidates, bar none, they seem to all be, without any opposition at all, they all seem to be fine. They're talking about what they can do war-wise. I've never seen so many hawks in my life. And what really bothers me is the fact that what they're talking about, oh, yes, we want to create a no-fly zone and shoot down Russian aircraft. Well, I wonder, has anybody ever told these fools that the Russians also are a nuclear nation with tons of nuclear weapons? And that something like that could be the start of World War III. And talk about how many people could be killed. I'm not talking about not just in Russia. Yes, the United States could destroy Russia, but what the Russians could do to the United States would be so horrific that those living would envy the dead. And I listened to all of them, and this is all of them, bar none of the 13 presidential candidates that the Republicans are putting up for election. And that's a very worrying situation. All they seem to be able to talk about is war. They want to go there, and as not only Donald Trump has said, but as several of the others, that they want to not only kill off the, quote, terrorists, but all the terrorist families, including, or they want to bomb, they want to carpet bomb areas and cities. Well, how many people live in these places who are not terrorists at all? They're just going to kill all of them too. It's frightening, the rhetoric that's coming from all of them and not just Donald Trump. And, you know, and that seems to be something that people should be taking note of. When you, the bombastic remark, and particularly I'm listening to Chris Christie. Mm-hmm. And his thing, yeah, we could just go there. We're just going to bomb everybody. If we think that you're a Muslim, you know, we're just going to go there and destroy the entire town where you live. And not only all your family, but the entire town. And these things are kind of frightening. Not only do they want to set up things like not letting another Muslim in the country, they don't seem to have any knowledge whatsoever of the American Constitution, of the division of powers. No single president can simply, just by some edict, cancel out all kinds of liberties for people. You have to have the approval of Congress to do many of these things. And none of them seem to have any clue about what powers they actually have.
Well, like I say, it's one thing to get elected, it's another thing to govern. And I wouldn't bet you that those who are talking about war and bombing would have a different scenario if and when they're elected.
Well, and
But they're just dangerous. The rhetoric is just really kind of frightening. Because it gives an insight into what Republicans, or these particular candidates, these 13 candidates, think.
Well, I think as much as anything else is a reflection of their ignorance, because that's why you have three branches of the government, so that you can have checks and balances. But, you know, when you consider that the highest political office in the United States and the most powerful position of any leader in the world, most of it's OJT and on-the-job training. And I think at best, what you're hearing now from these candidates is rhetoric. They're not going to know what they can do until they get into the job. And unfortunately, people pay attention to that. But until they actually get into the job, you know, if you have a good president, or what the majority thinks is a good president, I think two terms is too short, because by the time they get it, it's time for them to go.
Right.
And then we have to start all over training somebody else. So on the other hand, you know, with Bush second, you know, he stayed a little too long. But I think that by the time they actually understand the complexity, and keep in mind, there's a lot of information that the public doesn't have access to, that's classified, that even the legislators don't have access to. So once they get in the Oval Office, then they're going to sit around and say, you know, this is what you promised, and this is why you can't deliver it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joan, I can agree with some of the things Joan said, but not all of them. One thing is that we have to talk about what their policies are. And it doesn't always necessarily mean on-job training, you know, that you go like you're going into school. Many of them are coming, especially those that are on the, the executive side of things, where they're talking about the Republican executive side, is that they have ideas about what they want to do, since several of them do come out of Congress already. But what's really important is what they really want to do. And a lot of times your rhetoric can speak volumes of what your policies would be. And if you're already saying that you want to make war on every issue that you can, that what you want to do is curb a lot of human rights, talking about American rights and not just somebody else's rights, you have to look at what people are saying right now, because this is a set of beliefs that they're bringing with them. And it has nothing to do with learning what they can or cannot do when they get on the job. This is the ideas and things that they have right now, which you have to look for. Do you really want to put somebody in office who only wants to think of starting World War III, regardless of the consequences of that? Or do you want somebody who doesn't think enough of human rights or civil rights or liberties of American people to say that you can go and arrest people just arbitrarily? Or that you can start wars and carpet bomb people all over the place. Well, you know, first of all, I don't know if the American army, even though we have a huge modern army, can have hegemony over the entire world. That's a big order, and I think that we need to kind of take note of that, not just necessarily, well, they have to learn something when they get on the job. You have to learn about what people are thinking before they get there.
Well, but the point that I was trying to make, Mary, was that unless you're an incumbent, nobody knows how to be president of the United States. And it is the kind of rhetoric that you're hearing about World War III and putting troops on the ground in Syria, and that's not coming from a perspective of intelligence. And I don't mean, you know, their mental capacity. I'm talking about they don't have access to the information that the president has on which to make decisions. And so, yeah, you have to pay attention to what they're saying, but one of the reasons why I think that the Republicans are going to have such a hard time is because people are listening.
Well, people are beginning more or less to kind of listen to what people are saying now. But I'm still saying that just like Donald Trump puts forth a thing that he thinks that he can do so much by executive order, as we're finding out right now, that's not quite true. You know, you can't just basically go out and say, well, we're going to carpet bomb this type of area on executive order, or we're going to stop Americans, say, from voting, certain Americans vote. I can do this by executive order. No, you cannot. Some of these things are regulatory and are governed by the Constitution, and you have to work within those frameworks. But some of these people coming in, if you listen to them, they think that they don't have to worry about constitutional restrictions. And this is really kind of something that is frightening. Just like Supreme Court Justice Scalia was busy talking about how he thought that black people just didn't have the wherewithal or the basic brain power to go to Harvard and be able to graduate from Harvard. And this is essentially what he said. It's like rehashing arguments right out of the 40s and 50s when they came up and they were talking about the inability of people of color who didn't have the brain capacity as white people had. Well, so there are a lot of these things that you can listen to people sometimes and think about where they're going and how dangerous they might or could be.
But Scalia, since he's, you know, that's another issue. I mean, you know, that the fact that what can you do about it? They're on there until they retire or die. That's another thing that they need to look at, is putting terms on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's what you need terms.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And he's been saying that he has been anti-affirmative action from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
This is no surprise for Scalia. And the fact that he can say all these things.
Well, he's been saying them very publicly for a long time.
And you got it, world order, mm-hmm. The Supreme Court of the United States is a very unique body. I don't think there's any other organization in the world government like the Supreme Court, and their only job is to interpret the U.S. Constitution.
Well, they certainly can't enforce it. I forget which president said it when the Supreme Court gave some type of order, and I'll probably remember it off air someplace, when this particular president said, well, how many troops does they control? They don't control any. You know, so they're not going to be sending anybody. It's just the point that I was trying to make is when you have to look at these people and what they're saying as to what they could do if once in office, there'd be some big problems with some of them. Christie, and not just Donald Trump, but if you listen to all of them at their last debate or debates before that and how they think, and it's frightening to where some of them are coming from. Because it sounds like some of them are stepping right out of Nazi Germany.
Right. How do you think Cruz would be if he happened to be the nominee?
He would scare me to death. He scares me to death even right now.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a fascist, basically speaking.
Mm. I think Cruz is scarier than Trump, actually.
He's
worse than Trump?
Oh,
scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Big time.
He is somebody that I would not want to see anywhere near any type of authority.
Remember,
certainly
now,
not any, near any buttons.
He was behind the Tea Party movement to shut down the government.
Yes.
Okay, so it was Cruz who did that, mm-hmm. who championed that effort.
You have to listen to Cruz a lot of time. Go back if you want to go back on the computer sometimes, mm-hmm. and ask to read some of his previous statements.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do that.
Yeah, he is very, very.
They're predicting that he might be the nominee.
He is the.
Well, that's what he's thinking about.
Well, except that from what I, and again, you know, my sources are the same as everybody else's. From what I understand from Republican, from the leadership in the party, he's right on as far as his inroads into the GOP. He's right up there with Trump. They don't want him as a nominee any more than they want Trump.
Oh, wow.
Well, he could be the nominee, but neither Donald Trump nor Ted Cruz is going to be president. You know, we're listening to all these reports of popularity from the Republican side and who they would vote for. So we're not seeing what the nation would do. There is no way, and this is including some very stupid working class people. It's Donald Trump or Ted Cruz going to be president of the United States? Oh. Neither one.
Well, so it looks like the pickings are slim because all the other people have a lot of negative attached to them as well.
Well, the one that I particularly like, and I've been a Democrat all of my adult years of voting, mm-hmm. I particularly like Bernie Sanders. I think that Hillary's got a lot of baggage. She's also a big hawk, as a lot of people don't really know this. And she's had some associations, particularly with Wall Street, which leave a lot to be desired. You have to go back and read where some of her stance has been as well. Mm. I like Bernie Sanders, really.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to be elected.
Probably not, but I still, he would probably get my vote.
Mm. Yeah. Jean, what is that process called when they get into... and the Republicans have been talking about it, where they get into their caucus and they don't have enough delegates and they actually take the leadership from the floor.
Brokered convention.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can see if Donald Trump keeps his numbers up, mm-hmm. that the Republicans know that he's the best thing that could have happened for the Democrats.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, as I'm saying before, he would not only bring down, he would not only not be elected, Trump or Cruz or Rubio or any of the rest, and God knows a Senator Graham and a few of these others.
Is he still running?
Yeah, he's still in there.
Yeah, he's still in there.
He would be, it would be like,
13 now.
It would be like bringing down all of the Republicans like this, what they all fear. Mm-hmm. And it would be something else to see. Yeah,
how about Jeb Bush? We don't want three Bushes in presidency, right?
Well, Bush, have you listened to some of his remarks of late? You know, Bush there is no difference, basically. There's not a shred of light, if you stood them all up together, that you could see a pinpoint of light between any of the 13.
Mm-hmm.
They are all on the same page. They are all for restricting what civil liberties are left and what they could do. They're also, they're war-minded and they can set up all kinds of no-fly zones and pick a fight with the Russians.
How about immigration? I thought Bush stance be a little bit less harsh on immigration, being there's a lot of immigrants in Florida and his wife is, of Hispanic descent.
Well, let me see. I think his wife is out of Colombia she is, a Colombian, I believe,
well,
somewhere in there.
I don't think
his attitude toward immigration is not very much different from anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
not extreme. I think Trump got most extreme of all, right?
Oh yeah. Please. Mm-hmm. Now he's not. Not only is he talking about not letting any more Muslims in, he's talking about deporting the ones that are already here.
citizens
he's going
to
make
or
World
not.
War II and the Japanese. Yeah.
Well, he's talking about probably putting them in these camps like Roosevelt did in the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this would be something, too, that would be, I'm just not too sure. But you just have to watch and see. Frightening, basically, and that so many people, Republicans anyway, feel that way, but I think a lot of the Republicans feel that way, particularly white Republicans, is that there's always the boogeyman to many of these people of the Browning of America. And that was, and the thought of my God, the vestiges of white privileges that are left would be just swept away. And that's not true.
It's all about, it's always been about power and control.
Absolutely.
No, always been about power and control.
But it's the thought of many of them. And when you listen to some of the crowds that surround Trump's rallies, it's my God, where would we be as white people? We're going to be losing all of that.
Well, that's like the Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin. Did you hear her?
It's a Sarah Palin rally of, so many years ago, 8 years ago.
Well, she was just on not too long ago. I was listening to her on where she was attending.
She's
I think
supporting.
It was a Trump rally. I think she's supporting Trump.
Oh, is she?
Mm-hmm. And she was at one of these rallies where she was sprouting the same type of thing.
The only thing I can say about Sarah Palin is go home. the thing that I find surprising from my own personal perspective, what I find surprising to me after all these years is just the fact that a Trump can bring out all of this ugliness,
mm-hmm.
that I thought that we'd made some inroads.
Right.
And I'm not saying we didn't, you know, obviously we have a long way to go. But what surprised me personally was that I thought we had gone beyond some of this rhetoric about, verbally anyways, discriminating against people based on religion. I mean, that's a foundation of the Constitution, but and freedom of speech. So I guess, I don't know, maybe I was being naive that maybe we weren't ever as far as I thought we were in the first place.
Well, I think what's driving a lot of the insecurity is the fact that in 2025 or beyond, the minority population will be the majority population in the United States. And with that, you know, you're going to have more governors.
It's not very far from here now.
Senators, mayor, more congresspeople from the Hispanic community. And that's, I think, that's driving all this fear and security, because they know that, well, there's immigrants coming in from the European Asian country that's further diluting the strength of the white majority population, or the coming in through Mexico and South America. They know that this country's changing, and the change in their estimation won't be beneficial to them because they'll be losing control.
Well, it's a loss of privilege. You know, just think in the 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and probably up to the 60s primarily, the privileges that went with having a white skin. Well, just think of the privileges that went with it. And I guess it, you know, and for people to have to come to terms with that is probably pretty tough.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know what? After the Emancipation Proclamation, there were more, if you look at history, there were more black politicians than are today.
That was
of course right after the Civil War, when there was still a lot of resentment in the North about what Southerners had did.
Yeah,
and the idea of wanting to
political force, there were more black people.
That was the reason, was because, again, is that it was the idea in Congress a lot of times, even when they pass these acts, the suffrages acts, which didn't pass until actually after Lincoln was dead. You had a Congress who was resentful and who wanted to punish the South. And that's when a lot of this got in, when you had suffrage for particularly, well, black men. Black women didn't have the right vote, neither did white women. But black men did, you know, because that was where suffrage was. And this was because they wanted the South to pay for what they had basically done. They just simply wanted them to pay. And this was payback for the Civil War. And at that time, black people got in. But then look what Johnson did when he came in. He took the federal troops out of the South. And there was no more protection for the freedmen. And they, in the South, quickly took away all of those hard-won rights. Took away all of them. So, yes, that what you said was true. There was a majority. But that was when federal troops were in the South.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but when Johnson came in, and I mean, we're certainly talking about Lyndon Baines Johnson, that all that went away because the federal troops were, and there was no protection.
You know, I think
the freedmen.
What happened too is, you know, as Reconstruction, you know, after war and like you say, Lincoln being murdered, a lot of people were angry at the South in retaliation.
Yeah.
So they supported, I believe, a lot of the African American leaders.
They did. That was and to back that up, there
right.
was federal troops stationed in the South, you know, with the Ku Klux Klaners and all these other. They couldn't
right.
come to do anything because there were all these federal troops. But when the federal troops were taken out of the South.
I also believe Wesley Eads made the deal to disenfranchise African American once again is they saw, wait a minute, what have we done? We put in, you know, a race of people to rule the South, and racism probably kicked in.
Oh my God! With a vengeance.
But you can't overlook also that the black people who were slaves, or children of slaves, saw the opportunity that freedom supposedly afforded them and took advantage of it.
Of course they did.
Okay, so that you know that's what I'm saying, that we are now going to be the third largest minority population in the United States. If you'll notice, with all
wait,
of the
who's second?
Well, Asians.
Oh wow!
Yeah, Asians, and
well, Asians
and,
are barely making Asians
yes.
are barely making the mark right as of today.
Well, but
very
they,
small population.
But the Hispanics, they it's like Hispanics, Asians, and African Americans, and if you notice, unlike previous election cycles, where candidates actively sought African American votes,
right?
They have practically, I haven't seen one, other than Hillary, I think, actually court African-American votes.
Well, that may be, but I don't agree with you on that Asians are going to be second. There's a very small minority of Asians right now, and I don't see them with the, not only their birth rate, but also their influx coming from parts of Asia. I guess you're talking like Indians from India. I don't see that right now. I don't see Asians as a minority group that are outstripping African Americans right now.
Then it's further alluded to by the fact that even with the Latino Hispanic group, you got people from Puerto Rico who ancestors came from Africa, and a lot of those Hispanic speaking country. The origin, and even Brazil, you know, if they come to America, would it be counted as Latinos or Hispanic, or would it be, even though they speak Portuguese, would it be counted as African-American? So that's sort of mixed right there. There's this dilution of African-American because of slavery, you know, being all over this world, that a true Latino is may not be so true.
Well, that's
a
point,
too. The last story that I saw did put, and part of the reason was, I guess China has now lifted the one child, one couple quota, and that was one of the reasons that increased the immigration from China and people with money that they could come to the United States.
I don't even think that's going to be a big majority out there, because they reversed that, mainly because the Chinese woke up and found out that there were far more boys in China, or men, than women, and that not only would their population go, but they were getting a lot of people who were not elderly, and they were losing a lot of population, and decided that just wasn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to do something fast, and they did. They restricted that rule altogether, because they were getting all of this abundance of males.
Yeah, now that
not enough females. So that was another reason for that, which was I guess the Chinese were figuring at the time.
Yeah, even the economy, they were saying that, and I forgot about 20 years or 30 years, that it wouldn't matter if American bought cars or not, because the Chinese middle class population is so expanding so greatly that the China can support all the cars made in the world. Their population.
Well, their populations weren't going to go anywhere if they didn't have anything but men in it, so they had to do something about how they were regulating birth, marriage and birth.
But wasn't the reason why they were regulating birth in the first place is because of overpopulation?
That's right. They thought that there was just too many, but then it went in and they took such a down spiral that they had to do something about it. Ladies, we're almost over. We only got about 1 minute left in our conversation. I've enjoyed it very much, and I just want to thank my guests. On our live line was Betty Jean Grant. She is a Democrat. She's also minority leader of the Erie County Legislature. And in studio with me is Joan Simmons, and I'll let her say her own organization name. It's a long name.
It's the Niagara Frontier Movement for the Advocacy of African American Human Rights.
Well, and I should know that by now. And she's quite into educational issues and talks about them quite a bit on all opportunities that you can. Of course, I'm your host, Mary Davis. Stay with this station throughout your day. And also, I'd like to mention that you can also catch the Mary Davis Show on Tuesdays and Fridays in the city of Buffalo, Wednesdays throughout Western New York, and Fridays throughout Niagara County. So we're hoping that you take advantage of some of those, and we will talk to you again soon. And have a very happy holiday and a Merry Christmas to all of you.